Welcome to Lady Leadership, the podcast that celebrates and empowers women in leadership roles. I'm your host, Sam McIntyre. In each episode, we'll dive deep into the experiences, challenges, and triumphs of extraordinary women who are making their mark in various industries. My mission is to amplify the voices of women leaders, to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. By doing so, we can break down barriers, challenge stereotypes, and pave the way for a more inclusive and diverse future. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Lady Leadership Podcast. Super excited to have Rita Arrigo on the show. Now, Rita is a fellow tech lover. She's super experienced, a seasoned professional and key figure at CISRO, brings a wealth of experience and expertise to our conversation. She's not only demonstrated exceptional leadership in these cutting edge areas, but has also been a strong advocate for women in technology. Rita's forward-thinking approach and innovative mindset have paved the way for positive change, both within our organization and wider industry. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you, and thanks for the wonderful introduction. Really appreciate it, Sam.
Now, so good to have you on the show. And we were just talking before the show about we both went to the same secondary school. So we'll call it out, shall we? Star of the Sea in Garden.
That's right.
They still call it Garden Vale, or do they call it Brighton now?
Pretty sure they still call it Garden Vale. Yeah, absolutely.
We're both just talking about what a positive school that was and what a positive mindset and cheerleading type environment that was to go to secondary school.
Absolutely. I was just saying it was such an instrumental experience for me. Like, I still have amazing friends that go there that inspire me every day. And I think what it actually allowed you to do is imagine that anything is possible. So it just opens your mind to the possibilities of just wanting, you know, whatever you want to do is possible. And I think that's, I don't know if it was Jermaine Greer, I don't know if it was the nuns, I don't know what it was, but it's just one of the, and even my daughters, they went to Star and they have the same attitude. So it's something quite powerful about that, just opening your mind to the possibilities.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And, I mean, fascinating that we both ended up in tech as a result of, and so I'm really interested to hear why you got into tech.
You know what? It was really bizarre. I was really passionate about one of the teachers that we had there that had Apple Macs, and I'd seen them and it was really exciting. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to do typing because I was too good at maths and science. And I wanted to use new technology. But the other thing
back in those days, wasn't it? That's how you got to
Back in those days, it was PCs were more mathsy kind of a designy. Yeah. And then I actually met an amazing guy at Star of the Sea Careers Night who said, "You should do engineering." And I was like, "Oh my God, what even is it?" And it was the degree I ended up choosing was at Caulfield Institute of Technology back then, which is now part of Monash. And it was a double degree because that Caulfield actually started computing in Melbourne. They had their first kind of they've got a little computer museum there now in Caulfield campus. Nice. But you know, it was just an amazing time to learn about new things. And for me, that degree also led to the ability to, like, you know, be a lot more applied with my technology. So I think people that were coming from computing degrees were more about, you know, the programming and the software, whereas the engineering and computing that I did was more about how do you apply technology to challenges. And I think that's made a big difference to the way I look at technology as well.
Yeah, I really like that. I got into tech. My grandfather, so this is a funny story. I wasn't a great student like yourself. And, I just didn't apply myself as much as I should have. And there had to be a reason why I was studying things. And sometimes I couldn't connect the reason to the outside world and why we were doing something. And so my grandfather, who was actually a truck driver, but had been in the war and had sent telegraphic messages over, you know, wires to the troops, he was like, "Why don't you look at computers? I think they're going to be around for a while." And so I got into computer science. I studied at Footscray at the time, so their Institute of Technology there. I think I was just a couple of years behind you, and, you know, then ended up having like a 30-year career in technology. And what I've liked is it's always adapting, it's always changing, it's ever evolving. You know, you, like you said, applying yourself and problem solving. So, you know, there's always a problem to solve. Like every day you wake up, something's not quite right or working, or it's,
Yeah, there's
yeah.
always some human progress we want to get to, and I think that's, I suppose that's kind of part of what drives us in technology as well, because you're always looking at ways that you can, you know, you take technology to really be your co-pilot
Yeah.
in a lot of the challenges that we face. And I think that's, it's a great segue into the world of AI that I'm in. So at the moment, because, you know, you move out of tech and you kind of, oh, I never really moved out. I just kind of got into this other area. But you think about all these huge challenges we have, like around climate change and health, and how do we live leaner, greener, and like how do we be global at the same time being local, and how do we, you know, have all that creativity in our lives too, which makes our lives more interesting. We're not machines. And so, you know, it's really applying a lot of the thinking about the way we could apply AI to these kind of challenges. And it's fascinating, because then you see amazing examples like what ChatGPT is doing, which is really opening up the curiosity in people's minds to go, wow, maybe this AI stuff is useful, right? And so you kind of start to have these very sophisticated conversations around the possibilities, and then I think that's where you wake up to this new world where, because we can do it, should we do it type thing. And I think we're learning a lot about that. I was just actually watching this scary video of actually came from Deutsche Telekom, of a mother that was sharenting, this new word, which is basically sharing photos of your kids on Instagram and Facebook. I mean, we've been doing it for years. It's like our virtual photo album that we can share with the world. But her identity was stolen, and you know, she had a fake, you know, there was fake passwords, there was credit fraud against her, all kinds of stuff. And you're like, go, wow, you know, like how do we know that as parents, that there's going to be these kind of deep fakes environments, and who's protecting us from it type thing. So there's a lot of thinking that needs to go on around, you know, the evolution of technology, and then how do we actually be ethical about it as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really, you know, because everyone wants to try it and everyone wants to have a go, and you know, people want to solve, people want to make money through it as well. They want to create business.
Yeah.
They want to be able to sell information, or you know, just the I think the, you know, around data, the ability to analyze data at scale and the ability to have outputs, etc. Like, you know, the it's kind of like we haven't thought about what we haven't thought about.
Yeah. And I think the tech is going to evolve in a way, because I think sometimes technology isn't necessarily by design. It's like more like, wow, can we do this? And then it's like, then you figure it out, and then you go, okay, well, how do we apply an ethics lens to this? Or a lot of my work I'm doing is around responsible AI. How do we like apply a lens to this? Like, is it actually good for humanity type stuff? And it's really interesting to have these discussions, being a crazy positive technologist that I've always been, that all technology is great. But to think about, you know, what is actually that human impact? And I think that that's often somewhere that I don't actually go. But I think it's been really exciting in my new role at CSIRO to think about that, and to also think about engaging with non-technical people. I've always been quite fascinated about trying to make the tech, you know, something that everybody can embrace. It doesn't, you know, reduce techno fear. It's just like, it doesn't have to be something for technologists only. It needs to, you know, it's like something that everybody can use. But you know, thinking about these additional aspects has been a really super interesting evolution in my career.
Tell me then, what are your thoughts around, because we, you know, we're seeing a bit of the fear mongering as well, right? And so, oh, there'll be no developer jobs in 5 years' time. I mean, we heard that 10 years ago when things were offshore, there'd be no developers in Australia, or there'd be no, we've gone through all that sort of cycle. What are your thoughts then around AI and, you know, for and I think also for women, so women wanting to pursue a career in technology. What are some of the recommendations that you would give?
All right, so I've got a few things to say. First of all, I'm actually really blown away by how different AI is than any other technology in terms of the way it in the way that women have been fascinated by it. So, like at the National AI Centre, I work in a pretty much all woman team. We have one exec director, and also within Data61 CSIRO, 50% of the researchers are women in responsible AI. And it's just so amazing because, you know, having come from Microsoft where it was still at 23%, and a lot of the women didn't have senior management jobs, and, you know, there was still all that stuff, you know, just only 4 years ago, there was like, you know, and even still it's going on at Google and Microsoft, you know, a lot of protests around the way women are treated and, you know, the kind of career paths that are made available to them and the patriarchy in which the technology era has emerged. But I think AI is really different, and I think it's this need to bring in the multidisciplinaries and like thinking about more, much more these responsible AI techniques that we hadn't thought about in technology in the past. That's the first point I'm going to make. The second point I think is that,
Can I just ask you, Rita, then what are those women's backgrounds? So they're obviously got, have they got technology backgrounds, or are they coming from a different space, or are they coming from research space, or
lots of different spaces. Like they're coming from research, they're coming from marketing, they're coming from analytics, they're coming from business analytics skills, they're coming from law, lots of law background, design backgrounds, pharmaceutical, medical, like just all these other disciplines that are really feeding the thinking around this.
nice. And that's what you want. You want that diversity in the team, don't you? And that diversity of thinking. And so, you know, having those different backgrounds, having those different experiences, et cetera, that gets that diverse thinking about the subject as well.
And I think, you know, there was all those jokes about the programmers and, you know, sliding the pizza under the door to keep the programmers going. And it was a very boyish, malish
Sure, it's like
kind of thing.
yeah, like you said, I mean, that's the work that I now do. So the work that I now do is actually help organizations increase their women in technology, because I, you know, worked in technology for 30 years and then seen the numbers, and then I know that I've been able to change the numbers. And so you can change the numbers. And I caught up with the school principal just recently, at Strathcona Girls College in, I think it's in Kew, and she was saying that they're focused on STEM, and that 50% of their, so they're focused on STEM for the last 10 years, and 50% of their students now go into STEM, so all girls school. And so it's proof to me that, you know, if you focus on something and you work out the barriers, then you can change the system.
But I think what we experienced in our era, and I think there's still an element of that. There's girls graduating, but they're not staying in that field. So like, I think not one of the girls I graduated with from engineering, not that there was a lot, are still in engineering or in computing or in technology. So, you know, they tend to drop out because when you go into this work environments, you're in these patriarchal
And
scenarios.
that's what I want to change. So,
But I think AI can drive a lot of that. And so that was the first point, was that it's quite different than any other technology in terms of that diversity lens. There's a lot more focus on it. There's a lot more people thinking about the dangers of AI and how to make it responsible. And that's actually bringing a lot of women in. It's also the areas where it's very multidisciplinary. So it's not just about, do you have a programming background? Do you know computer science? It's like, no, I know medicine. I know agriculture. I know, you know, history. I know this. I know that. And it's like very much more welcoming to the multidisciplinary aspects of it. And I think the third thing, when you ask me about jobs, et cetera, I do think jobs are going to change. And I think, you know, but they're going to change for the better kind of thing. Like there's so much drudgery and so much knowledge work that we do today. Like it's so hard to find information. It's hard to network. It's hard to break those patriarchal models that existed because they were established. And a lot of these changes are going to drive this new way of thinking. And I don't think that people are going to lose their jobs. I just think they're going to be
They're
different.
evolving. I really love that. AI can change in embedded patriarchal environments. I think that's fabulous because
I think so.
I, we all love that, don't we? Because
Yeah.
and because I know how I've been using AI, and I've been, so obviously I run my own business, etc. And I'm like, tell me the top 10 women in technology in Australia. Tell me the top 100 women in technology in Australia. It'll spit out a list of what it thinks. And it's like, could you have another go? Could you put them in retail? Could you do it this way? Could you do it that way? Even the questions for today, reader, I put it into ChatGPT. I put your profile into ChatGPT and said, could you give me some questions for reader? Now, obviously, I read the questions to make sure whether they're appropriate or not, and or I change them, etc. But it makes doing all of those things a hell of a lot easier. And so, therefore, I don't have to go and sit at the RACV club and hope that one of my mates wanders in potentially.
No, definitely. It makes a lot of that writer's block and like thinking kind of, happen. And it is definitely an amazing tool. But like, imagine all the other painful things that we do at work. The productivity benefits and also the ability to like really welcome people in to new roles where it would have been really hard to train them in those new roles. So, you
Learning.
know,
Tell me what I should do. Now, I haven't typed this in. Tell me what I should do if I'm a CIO. Tell me what I should do if I'm a new BA in a workplace. What are the things? A girlfriend of mine had been out of the workforce for some time, and she went back in, and this was a real eye opener for me, in that she was like, I don't know really about email etiquette. She hadn't worked. She'd been working in. She'd been doing. Like renovations and stuff like that, building houses and renovating houses and things like that. And then she went into a digital role. She went through on a program to, kind of re. She the kids are, older now, and she's like, I want to, kind of re-establish my career and do something differently. And, I can still do the houses on the side. And so she went into digital. But she was like, there was a whole piece around kind of etiquette and email etiquette and meeting etiquette. And she, like, her insights were just so fascinating to me around the things that we probably accept around how meetings are so slow and meetings are so ridiculous. And although it was really fun conversation I had with her.
yeah, it is true. I try. You can really disrupt, freak people out if you try and do like really quick meetings, like let's get on with this. I think it's a really important discipline to have because perfection does kill progress in a lot of ways. And I think sometimes we get caught up in all of that. And because it's really interesting, ChatGPT being such a experiment, and then you look at how many problems it has. You know, it hallucinates, it gets things wrong, it like
Phrases. It's like,
it steals technical, private data and puts it into its database, and but then it does all this other amazing stuff. So, it's really interesting to kind of imagine doing something quite differently. That's not perfect. That's not, 100% like, that's a little bit scrappy. And I think it's part of this movement into going out of waterfall into agile, but also like thinking about, what's good enough and what can get us to the next step and those kind of things. I mean, I'm married to this perfectionist artist where everything is perfect, right? But there's a place and everything for that kind of thinking. So there's also the ability to be a little bit different and to do things differently and not have to follow those etiquettes that we have so strongly embedded in our worlds, don't you think?
Oh, completely. And it's fascinating. And I, I've played around with it a bit. And just recently my son had to do a project for school, and I don't like to do kids projects for school. I don't, it's not from, I don't want to go back through grade six and, into secondary school. But and so my older son, we've been really good. He's just done his own thing, very capable. My younger son has dyslexia. And so he does struggle with some activities, or he struggles with anxiety around the activity and understanding the activity. Anyway, I was giving him a hand with this project on Howard Florey, who created penicillin, or one of the creators of penicillin, which you probably know, but I didn't remember. Anyway, and so I put into ChatGPT, tell me about Howard Florey, and it gave me quite a long sentence. And then my 12-year-old's like, that looks too much. That looks too manageable.
Make it shorter.
Yeah, and so I was like, make it shorter. And so then make it shorter. But then the tone of it wasn't right. And so then I was like, write this as a 12-year-old. And what came out was, you know, two or three really quite nice, simple sentences that we then use for the assignment, you know, which, I mean, quite incredible. And I even have had conversations with my 15-year-old around how is school embracing, you know, ChatGPT. And he was like, he actually said, different subjects are so the teachers probably haven't quite maybe got there on aligning around how they'll use it. And so, because he said some teachers are different to others, and so some
yeah
are very encouraged to use it.
And I don't know if you saw the news recently. South Australian government has invested in a kind of secure EDU chat that's based so. It actually uses a different pre-trained model to what ChatGPT uses, because, you know, ChatGPT, the GPT, is G for generative, P for pre-trained, and T for transformer. And so what they've done is they've actually taken the generative transformer technology, but at their own pre-trained data, which means that that data set will become, you know, it's much more relevant to Australian kids.
Yeah.
It doesn't have some of those risks associated with it. And I think that's making a lot of teachers feel a lot more comfortable in South Australia, and be really amazing to see if that could be expanded. Because I think what we're learning about from social media and from things like ChatGPT, sometimes the free stuff isn't the best stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to think about, you know, what's the right thing for our kids, and, you know, for within our environments, and like what would be much more valuable to them. So yeah, I love these innovations that people are thinking of, you know, how do we make this specifically Australian, and how do we embed our own values into these platforms, and how do we protect our kids from what's going on those platforms as well.
Does your mind blow then when you think about how they've created this software as a technologist? Like, can you?
No, not really, because I've been in natural language processing for a while. So, like, you know, I was working on chatbots back at Microsoft in 2016, and they had Lewis, and, you know, you could just I could pump in an FAQ and ask questions to Lewis, and it would answer all the FAQs for me, all that kind of stuff.
Put the information in there, and then it's pulling it.
Yeah, so I've been playing with this stuff for a while, but I think what was exciting about the generative element is that, and you know, it's a real challenge for us in inclusion and diversity, because it actually learns from what it reads. And so if you put in the nurse was approaching the table, it will automatically assume it's a female nurse, right? And so because that's
there's a lot of
those examples, right? Because it uses language to predict and different things like that. So, but I just think it's amazing. I just think what I love about it is it's just really opened the world up for people to play with something. It's kind of like a Google moment. Like, you know, when Google was around, you know, it wasn't the first search engine. We used to play with Alta Vista. We used to play with all these other weird stuff. But what Google did was made it easier for people to get, and that's what ChatGPT has done. But it doesn't mean it's going to be the only thing out there. So there's so many other options. So, you know, Google's got Bard. They actually invented the transformer model, but they don't. That they use a data set that's actually the whole of the internet, because they've got Google, right? And so Google Bard is slightly different than what ChatGPT is, and that, you know, they're doing a lot of work around app builders using generative AI and those kind of things. But and then there's obviously the work that is going on in the innovation space. So what are people thinking about what generative AI can do? So I was actually talking to this amazing architectural pop-out company that came out of Melbourne called Archie Star, and a whole lot of architects. And, you know, there's a lot of female architects, which is really interesting. And what they're doing is, you know, you were talking about your friend in renovation. So one of the biggest challenges in design is just being able to create all those room layouts and all those designs, and then being able to choose the best one. So they're using generative AI to actually generate a lot of these designs, and then you kind of choose the one that's the best one, instead of having a poor little architect sitting there drawing them all and stuff like that. So it's really amazing what generative AI can do in a range of industries, not just in the whole language generation space.
Yeah. So if you're Jill, I was going to say Joe Blogs, but let's call her Jill Blogs on the street.
Why not?
And you're thinking, I want to have a play around with AI. What would you recommend?
I would definitely do one of these micro skills, like a little LinkedIn micro skill, or we're actually looking at making some micro skills available. If you're in New South Wales, you can log on to the IADT site, or I would do just like, just 16 hours, just so you can get your head around all the different types of AI, and what is computer vision, and what is a machine learning, and what can it predict, and what kind of data do you need, and what are some of the problems that can occur, so that you can, get your brain around these responsible AI issues, because we don't want the world to think that the machines are going to take over, and that, Hollywood is real, and that we're going to live in a matrix, and we're going to be plugged in, and, all these horrible things are going to happen. And we want to be aware of it. And I think AI is really different to other revolutions we've had. When digital transformation came along, I remember, being in meetings with executives, and executives going, "Look, it's all too complex. Just talk to the tech people. I just want to get on with my business world." Whereas now AI is like so important to the executives and so important to everyone in the business that I think, everyone's got to have an opinion. You can't just
You can't just
point to the
and
talk to the hand.
that piece has always frustrated me, right? Because it's like, well, you've got to be to be an executive, you've got to be across your finances, you've got to be across your HR, you've got to be across those business skills. Technology is just one of those. It's even the fact that we still call it the business and technology. That I mean that just that whole piece just needs to evolve.
And I think AI is doing that because what's happening is it's being sometimes when it's implemented without senior leaders, little things go wrong, right? Like, you must see on the news some of the news things. I mean, a really prevalent example is two things that happened when I was at Microsoft. First of all, they had, Tay, which was the bot that went mad, and that was using one of the first transformer models before GPT, and it was being trained by its own data, and so that's why it went so feral, right? And so, but that was done in a technical world, and it was also a bit of an experiment. The second one was, Microsoft had this has and still has this amazing software that does computer vision. It can recognize your face, it can recognize your gender, your emotion, your age, and it can, so it was being used extensively by the blind community to help them understand people around them, to these kind of things. But then the policing community started to use it, and they used it in a way that was not aligned with responsible AI. They didn't have a woke data set. They hadn't tested it appropriately, and they hadn't had enough executives involved that were non-technical, I think, right? And I think that is the kind of things that can really happen if you don't get involved as a non-technical person, because I think these things are so transformative that we need the opinions that are beyond, "Hey, if we can do it, let's do it." It's like, "Hey, if we can do it, let's do it well," type thing. So
So if you're a woman in tech, explore AI at the moment, explore how you can get involved by the sounds of it. What do you recommend then for women in technology around growing their careers, et cetera, as well?
well, I'm always learning. It drives me batty. And it just, for me, I always need to make room to learn about the next thing. And I think sometimes it's really hard to achieve because I think in our careers, it's really packed in. It's like you've got 9 to 5 and you've got to achieve everything in that time. So you're packed in. But maybe one of the ways that might do it is, get on an AI project. If you're one of those people that learn from doing, just get into one. Like, do your micro skill, your 16-hour micro skill, and then ask to be involved in an AI project, because we need more people involved in them to kind of bring those diversity lenses and bring those different ways of thinking. So I would, you know, if there's an AI project going down at your work, get involved or build one.
Build
You know,
one. I was going
think
to say, if there's not one, say to the team, what's some experiments or some AI experiments that we can.
let's do one. Let's do an
Yeah.
experiment. I know we're all busy, but let's do 10% of our time and see what happens, because otherwise we'll be left behind. And
What are some of the
that's
problems that we've got that we'd like that, you know, the team here have got that we'd like to solve? Let's try some AI ideas to solve them.
Yeah, let's just think about it. You know, what's possible? Let's brainstorm. Let's think about it. You know, and I think that's one of the most important things you can do is, as a leader, and particularly in your career, is to kind of think about, you know, what are the new things and what are we doing with it, and what's the next project we're going to do with it. But get yourself a little bit of a grounding so that, you know,
And I think seek out some other people in that space, start following, you know, there's lots of people talking about AI at the moment. Who are some of the people that you like that are talking about AI?
Well, I'm really lucky because I got to judge the Women in AI Awards twice.
Nice.
So I got a bit of a Women in AI lens on a lot of things. But there's this amazing lady called Camille who runs a company called Xylo, Xylo. She's actually an Indigenous lady, and she was obsessed with biodiversity. She was a biodiversity, you know, she wants to make the biodiversity in our world bit more real, and like bring back the animals and like protect our environment. And so she started a little pilot with a zoo in New South Wales to kind of collect data and you know, do it in a way that wasn't like the environmentalists would traditionally do, which is like on a spreadsheet on their computer. Actually, like use the cloud and then be able to predict the numbers and a lot of those kind of, you know, bring this new tech into this science that didn't have it. So she's now got an amazing startup. She's got really starting to help companies. Another one is Dr. Helen Fraser, who actually won the Women in AI Award last year, and she's been doing amazing things with breast cancer scans and trying to figure out like how do we predict and how do we support the fact that there's just not enough radiologists in the world, and how do we make it easier for them to, you know, get these screens out and to make them more accurate, and then also, you know, to do those longitudinal studies. And breast cancer is not one of it's not the only one. You know, there's all this work around health in, you know, the lungs and the brain and different areas. Mikola Jade is amazing. So she's also an Indigenous woman, and she's got Indigital. And she's always been obsessed with the idea that Indigenous people are amazing technologists. And I agree with her. Like, I live here in Elwood and Point Ormond, and that used to be like, it was like a computer swap meeting, but for tools.
Yeah.
Like where everyone would come and they would share their technology. And so she did all this work with augmented reality and like helping the rangers to start to use mixed reality to better understand their environment. And then, you know, that got even more extended, and now there's this country AI that's being used extensively by the rangers, and CSIRO has invested in that, and so that stuff is really amazing to kind of take those a understanding that the Indigenous have from years and years of looking after the land and put it into AI models. So that one's spectacular. So yeah, I've got heaps of these stories and I could go on forever. But I think we
Look, I absolutely love it, and I'll probably just finish with Rita. What are some of the lessons or some of the obstacles or things that, like, you know, your background in technology, what would you recommend for women to focus on or do, or what's helped you?
Me, I'm a, because I'm, I think, you know, I'm not really, I know you think I'm really good at reading and all that stuff, but I'm not. But I love being able to get my hands in and like learn from doing. So like, if there's no AI projects going down at your work, go do a hackathon. Like, just spend a weekend and get into something. Like, you know, GovHack's coming up, and you can hang out with other people that are trying to learn stuff, or that more advanced, or that have different opinions to you, and you can like really tap into the diversity of the community and work on a project and learn on something. So I've found that, you know, if work doesn't offer these things to you, or it's too hard to get the business case, or you're just too bloody busy, which is often the case,
Of course.
Just go and spend a weekend doing this stuff, because your career is going to thank you for it, because you're going to go come back and know something different than everybody else. So, and I
Right.
think
Your career is going to thank you for it. I love that.
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, because and you just learn stuff.
Yeah, and I think it does hurt to do it at work sometimes, and sometimes you're a different persona on the weekend where you're kind of like a little bit more, this is what I do, but this is what I love type stuff. So, it gives you a chance to also think about. And the other area that I found's really helped me is I'm a LinkedIn nut, and but I find that what it's allowed me to do is express what I believe in, which I think sometimes in our technology worlds, being able to express what you believe in can sometimes be a little bit suppressed, because you've got all these other experts in the room, and you might be the only girl, or you might be not as qualified as other people, and like you're just like, I'm not going to say that. Whereas on LinkedIn, you can kind of feel a little less self-conscious, and you can actually just let go a little. And I find and that's really worked for me, because it means that people know what I believe in, and the kind of things that I find interesting. And I see that as an opportunity for all leaders to be able to kind of express that as well.
Yeah, and I mean that's where I found you.
Yeah, there
Yeah,
you go.
I saw your post about AI and I thought Rita would be a fantastic person to have on the show and I really like what she stands for, et cetera, et cetera. So I mean it's a great platform for that. And I really like the piece around what you said, sometimes you are suppressed in the office and particularly as a woman in technology, sometimes you're suppressed or you're not necessarily the loudest voice or you can't find the space to have your say or you think something different to what everyone else thinks.
Exactly.
I've been that person multiple times, or you have, and I think it's a good opportunity to try things on the side, do things on the side, or find those people, find other people, to try that out with.
Thank you. And thank you for your positive interaction. It's been wonderful to talk to you today, and to talk about, the future and what we have awaiting us, and also a very diverse future.
Thank you, Rita, so much for being on the show. Now, do you remember our school hymn, Ave Santissima, Ave Purissima?
Ave Maria. They've changed it. There's a new one now. They've
There's a new
modernized
song, and
it.
they've read it. So it was our school song, I think, back in the day. And then so they've got a new school song, and then this is the school hymn, apparently, because I went looking for it when I was having it on the show. So, sinless and beautiful, Star of
That's
the
it.
Snake.
Sinless and beautiful.
Well, thank you so much, Rita. It's been fabulous
Pleasure.
having you. Cheers.
All right. Ciao. Bye.
Hope you enjoyed the show. I would love for you to hit subscribe and leave a review, and that will allow the show to be circulated more broadly and share more inspiring women's stories. If you'd like to work with me, if you'd like some help with your leadership and your development, then check out my website, www.leadership.com. You can book in there for a career review. We can talk about your goals, we can talk about your aspirations, and we can talk about what you want to achieve in your career. And I can help you get there. Hope you have a great day. Cheers.